Otten.
We've had the same internal debate.
Okay. Otten v. Goings. All right, Ms. O'Brien.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. May it please the court. Angela O'Brien, Assistant Attorney General, on behalf of defendants appellants Sergeant Robert Goings, Sergeant Lance Wallace, and Lieutenant Jonathan Stringer. We are asking the court to reverse the district court's denial of the officer's motion for summary judgment. This court should grant the motion, finding that Otten's excessive force claims against them are heck barred, and that the officers are entitled to qualified immunity. Further, this court should remand with instructions for Otten's excessive force claims to be dismissed with prejudice to their being asserted again until the heck conditions are met. Otten's claim should be dismissed because he claims he was attacked without any provocation and did nothing wrong during his encounters with correctional officers, which directly challenges the factual determinations that underlie his prison disciplinary convictions for defiance and aggravated disobedience.
He sort of argues, separate and apart from the offenses which gave rise to the disciplinary, that he was beaten, which is his argument, is that none of that is intertwined with the complaints themselves. So how do we unpack his excessive violence? In other words, he says, even if I did what you say I did, you still didn't have a right to beat me.
Okay, so his claim here is not that, well, Oakwin is instructive here, part of Oakwin is instructive here, because in Oakwin, the court found that part of plaintiff's claims were heck barred before he was restrained. And they were heck barred because plaintiff claimed he was wholly blameless for the encounter that took place with correctional officers. And this is also what's happening here. It's not that he's claimed all along since the beginning of his initial administrative remedy procedure that he was just attacked for no reason in both of these encounters and didn't do anything wrong. And that this isn't a claim that inmate is claiming that he was resisting, but the force that was used, outweighs what his resistance was. His claim is that he never resisted. And if we look, if your court would like, I can look at each of the disciplinary convictions that he was found guilty of and apply how it applies to the facts of what happened here during each encounter.
So this case turns, it matters here. He's claiming actual innocence on all the complaints, is that right?
Correct, Your Honor.
So is it, before you get into that, is there any relief that he would be entitled to if he were successful, other than a reversal of the sanction that he received for the conduct as found through the administrative tribunal?
I want to make sure I understand your question correctly. If he had appealed just his disciplinary conviction, he could have done that through a procedure, taken an appeal to the 19th JDC, and contested his disciplinary conviction, and he didn't do that.
Okay.
He filed this 1983 lawsuit claiming that officers beat him during both incidents for no reason.
But the heck argument would preclude, if we were to agree with you, it would preclude not only him getting relief, in other words, a reversal of the punishment that's been imposed, but is he also seeking financial damages as
Correct.
Well?
Okay. He's seeking monetary
okay.
relief, Your Honor. He's actually not seeking that his conviction be overturned in this lawsuit.
Okay.
He's strictly seeking monetary damages.
By claiming that he was completely faultless and did not commit the acts as found.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Just that officers beat him without provocation. So the first incident that occurred here occurred in the lieutenant's office. Mr. Otten claims that, he was brought into the disciplinary report controls here, and what's important about the disciplinary report is that it covers the entirety of the incident and all the officers. And this, in the lieutenant's office, Sergeant Goings and Lieutenant Stringer are the officers that Otten has his claims against. And the disciplinary report covers the entirety of of the incident. It's not like Oakland, where there was a temporal break where Mr. Oakland was restrained and then he had claims after he was restrained. That's not this. So the disciplinary, and he was found guilty also to, you know, here he was found guilty of contraband, defiance, and aggravated disobedience in the first incident and lost 30 days of good time, in addition to a transfer to extended lockdown and restitution. You know, if he had only been given restitution, we wouldn't be here because, you know, we're here because he lost good time for both of these incidents.
Well, aren't we here for the 1983 damages claim?
Yes, Your Honor. And what I meant is we wouldn't be able to argue heck if he hadn't lost good time.
So, but he's here only for 1983 damages. So heck bars it unless the prior conviction is reversed on direct appeal or expunged or declared invalid. And none of that happened here.
Correct, Your Honor.
None of the habeas.
Correct. He did not pursue any of the measures that he could have to have this overturned. Okay. And so it still stands today for both of the incidents.
Okay.
Even if he doesn't hear because he's claiming actual innocence, but even if he said, yes, I did all of that, but you still didn't have a right under 1983 to beat me. So is his claim of complete innocence from the disciplinary charges what makes the matter so inextricably bound with heck?
Yes, Your Honor, that, and then I also think, too, what happened here and how it is detailed in the disciplinary report. And, you know, it shows what happened during this incident and that there's no break. Because I know in some of the cases that have recently come before this court, you know, there have been breaks. And the offenders were not written up separately for the incidents that occurred. But that's not what occurred here. These two incidents happened. He was written up separately for both of them and lost good time for both of them. 30 days for the first incident and 120 days for the second incident.
I think following the briefing, we had two cases, Santos and Gray, which came down somewhat similar. Do those help you or do they alter the circumstance at all?
I believe, and if you could just give me 1 minute, Your Honor, because I, in my head, they're, since they're similar, I believe, and Santos is helpful because in Santos, he was found guilty of 9 rule violations, including similar ones here, defiance and aggravated disobedience. But in Santos and Gray, I believe part of the issue was there wasn't the definitions of defiance and aggravated disobedience, so the record was not complete. Whereas here we have a complete record where we have the definitions of the rule violations and we also have an application to what happened here.
Well, the district court was aware of heck and tried to kind of parse through the way that these claims ensued, but found as to the one it to be segregable, you know, and not heck barred. So, I mean, the court was aware of heck and otherwise ruled heck barred, but on the one particular claim, either temporally or otherwise, found that it could be segregated, you know, from the other claims, or said differently, that relief for him didn't inescapably result in reversing the disciplinary action.
Correct, Your Honor, and that's where we disagree with the district court, because he broke up the incident where there wasn't a break in the incident. In particular, if we look at the first one, so Auten is brought to the lieutenant's office because he's alleged to have contraband. When in the office at first, it's just Auten and Sergeant Robert Goings. He asked him to, you know, hand over the contraband. I believe Auten did hand over something, but then some other object falls, and that's kind of where it starts, where they start tussling over the object. Auten hits Sergeant Goings. They fall to the ground. Sergeant Goings is trying to request backup. He can't because they're tussling. They fall to the ground. He's able to call for backup. At this point, Auten is still actively resisting and also trying to swallow the unknown object. That's when I believe Lieutenant Stringer arrives, and Sergeant Goings says he sees that he's trying to swallow the unknown object. So Lieutenant Stringer, at that point, I think he had already swallowed the object, but Lieutenant Stringer is able to, I think, gain control of his left hand. And then after that, the rest of the officers arrive. They're able to subdue him to then where they're able to get him in cuffs, and then the incident ends. And he's written up for aggravated disobedience and, contraband and defiance, but defiance and the aggravated disobedience are most important here, because if he had just been convicted of contraband and lost good time, we couldn't, the heck argument really wouldn't, we wouldn't be able to go forward with that. But defiance says, no offender shall commit or threaten physically or verbally to commit bodily harm upon another person. And then the other pertinent part is that no offender shall obstruct, resist, distract, or attempt to elude staff in the performance of their duties. And then aggravated disobedience, offenders must obey direct verbal orders cooperatively and promptly and not debate, argue, or ignore orders before obeying. And that's directly what happened here. That heck bars Auten from now saying that, he didn't resist and didn't do anything wrong. So that is why heck is applicable here. So then that incident ends, and he is transported to medical to get checked out, and also they want to run a body scan on him since he had swallowed that unknown object.
Gray leaves no doubt that it applies to this type of disciplinary hearing and loss of good time, does it?
Correct, Your Honor. I believe Gray and Sanchez, yes, definitely foreclose any debate that heck does not apply in these type of situations where disciplinary convictions in the prison context result in the loss of good time. What's important is that, there's no allegation that anything happened when he was transported to medical and while he was at medical. He specifically says in his testimony, there's nothing in the complaint, and then he specifically says that, in his testimony, deposition testimony, so after you left the lieutenant's office all the way to Dr. Cleveland, did they attack you anymore? No. So then he is now, after he finishes getting checked out by medical and gets the scan, he is going to be taken, escorted to the dry tank because he's got to be monitored since he swallowed this unknown object. So they're on the sunwalk unit, and this incident involves Sergeant Wallace and Lieutenant Stringer. So and once again, on this incident, he pleads guilty to defiance, or no, he's found guilty of defiance and aggravated disobedience. While they're getting ready to, starting to transport him, Auten grabs Lieutenant Stringer's hand and tried to ram his shoulder into his body, once again, trying to resist. Lieutenant Stringer is able to bring him to the ground. He's telling him to start resisting, but he's continuing to resist throughout this encounter. He's kicking, he's being aggressive. So other officers arrive to help, including Sergeant Wallace. Sergeant Wallace is able to secure Auten's upper torso. And at that point, he ceases resisting. As I discussed earlier, you know, the definitions for defiance and disobedience, those definitions directly apply to the conduct that Auten exhibited and was found guilty of.
All right. Thank you, Ms. O'Brien. You've reserved your rebuttal time.
Yes. Thank you.
All right. Ms. Gardner.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Morning.
I'd first like to point out that you just heard 10 or 15 minutes of argument on facts. Now, one of the complaints that we've made is that these reports that are uncertified, unsworn, unsigned, or hearsay. Now, I understand in the past the court has said, well, they're just there to show that he received a loss of good time. But what it doesn't show is for what conduct he received a loss of good time.
Let's start at first principles. Do you acknowledge that through Heck, Santos, Gray, that the Heck bar does apply to disciplinary proceedings?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Categorically, and I go back to Muhammad, and I want to go back to Clark, and I know Judge Weimer, and I think you, Judge Stewart, were on the panel for Clark. But
well, Santos and Gray are the most recent pronouncements from our court, and then there are other cases that similarly hold that disciplinary proceedings like convictions. So let's just say, I know you want to argue fact, but what's the best case, controlling case you have that the Heck bar doesn't apply to disciplinary proceedings here? Because that's—
I have the Supreme Court case. I have the Muhammad case. And the Muhammad case, there was a split in the circuit.
Muhammad circuits. Before Heck or after?
Muhammad comes after Heck, and it addresses Heck, and it's a United States Supreme Court case. And
what's the cut line?
Not applicable,
sir?
Here. Muhammad is not applicable here.
Well, it's a Supreme Court case. It says that these Heck does not apply categorically to all disciplinary proceedings, and it goes through the Edwards versus Balsakoff line of cases and says that Heck bar applies where there is a challenge to the procedural nature of the disciplinary procedures. For example, let's go back to Clark, where in the dicta of Clark—
Oh, okay, let's come back to square one. Number one, Mr. Auten is claiming actual innocence, right? I didn't do it. He's claiming—
He is saying they continued to beat me after I was restrained.
No.
Mr. Auten is.
He is claiming actual innocence. In other words, he's not arguing, okay, I had the drugs and all of that, but there was no right for me to be beaten, therefore I have a claim under Section 1983. Here, he's claiming actual innocence, and in the petition, he's not asking for reinstatement, is he not?
There is no reinstatement. A favorable decision on the merits, it's not like he's challenging the disciplinary proceedings and saying, they were unconstitutional. There was a denial of due process. So if you set aside this disciplinary proceeding, I get a return of good time credits. The outcome of this 1983 case will in no manner affect or return good time credits. This purported disciplinary report, uncertified, unsigned, does not say you lost good time credits for a Rule 3 violation. It doesn't say you lost good time credits for a Rule 5 violation for this fact and that fact. We don't even have the audio tapes. I mean, this is all argument that is being made as facts off of inadmissible hearsay, which you can't even consider this evidence.
The principal issue here, the state appeals, is to say the claims are heck barred because they're inextricably tied to the underlying disciplinary conviction. So, I mean, they're making a legal argument, not a challenge
based on the
facts.
Facts that they're claiming are established by this disciplinary report. So if we back up, his testimony was he's in the wind unit. There's videos all over the wind unit. He's escorted from his bunk through the wind unit, through the TV room, into the lobby, into the lieutenant's office, where there's this scuffle for them choking him and trying to get allegedly something out of his mouth. He says, after I was restrained, they continued to beat, stomp, and kick me. Now, there's nothing about that in this disciplinary report, which the court is accepting the facts of this, which is hearsay, as evidence of factual evidence. This court is taking these inadmissible reports and saying, well, that's facts against him, when this is not evidence in federal court. And so he then says, when they got me on the walk, they took me down, and even one of the other officers says that there was a situation where they took him to the ground and again beat him. There's nothing in these disciplinary reports that accounts for that. There's nothing in these disciplinary reports that account for his injuries. There's nothing in these disciplinary reports that say, well, he was bleeding and beat up because we choked him. How does that, you know, make his face all bloody? His nose was bleeding because we had him down on the ground and restrained him. You know, so in this case, the court seems to be focusing on these disciplinary reports as a basis for its facts. And these reports are not in proper form, and they do not say what the hearing officers considered or what their findings of fact were as to Rule 1, Rule 3, Rule 5. Moreover, if you look at these, you could speculate that there was an enhancement, and he may have gotten a loss of good time credits due to some sort of enhancement, and not because of a contraband violation, which has nothing to do with the excessive force. Rule 3 is talking back. Rule 5 is the only possible aggravated charge here. And you don't know what they're claiming is facts that support any of those charges. All you know is that there's a piece of paper, two pieces of paper floating out there, unsigned, uncertified, that the state is asking this court to accept as facts and to say, this is the disciplinary hearing board did this. The disciplinary hearing board did that. Do these reports say that? No, they don't. They don't say what the disciplinary board did. They don't say what they considered. And if you look at Santos, which is Santos and Gray, in the Gray case and the Oton case, I mean the Lane case as well, the courts have said, you know, you can't categorically apply Heck, even though this court is like going pre-Muhammad, where Muhammad, there was a conflict in the circuits is why they took Muhammad up. Because some of the circuits were doing like this circuit is now, since the Bourne decision, and saying we're going to categorically apply Heck to prison disciplinary proceedings. So that is why, that split in the circuit is why the Supreme Court accepted certification on the Muhammad case. Now, when the Clark case came down, that was a case that followed the Edwards versus Balsakoff line of cases, where there was a challenge to the actual due process of the disciplinary proceedings. So if I got a Rule 3 violation and I went in and said Rule 3 is unconstitutional, and I had lost good time credits for the violation of Rule 3, and I said it's unconstitutional, and Judge Weimer agreed with me and says, yes, it's unconstitutional, I would get my good time credits back. And that's what happened in the Stalder and Balsakoff line of cases. In the Bourne case, which came about around 2019, Judge Smith wrote that. I'm not trying to be mean or criticize anybody, but the Clark case was inappropriately applied to the garden variety disciplinary matter, which the Supreme Court Muhammad settled the split in the circuits and said, we're not going to do that. So I'd just like for this court to look at the fact that the district court said material issues of fact preclude these summary judgments. So there's not really a question as to that, and one can see why this can't be taken as facts as what anybody else did other than what somebody typed on possibly a certain day. It's not even certified. So I'd ask this court to look at those issues and to look at the Muhammad case, which we've cited, which resolved the split in the circuits, And at the time when they resolved the split in the circuits, this court was on the side that said they do not categorically apply to disciplinary proceedings, and there was a decision by Judge Politz on that.
But so Santos and Gray do not categorically apply Heck to disciplinary proceedings. Matter of fact, in Santos, the panel said not all of the charges against the defendant were they could be segregable, and for those that weren't intertwined, it separated out and says his claim can go forth. It's the ones that were tied to the conviction. And that so there was no categorical application of Heck. So tell us how. I know you're arguing facts, but tell us how your client's claims are segregable from the underlying conviction so that the Heck bar doesn't apply.
Can I touch on something very interesting about the Santos case? You know, in Santos...
Well, it would help if you respond to my question.
He was... Okay, Judge, but Santos was charged criminally for the same things that they wrote him up for, and he was found criminally. They dismissed those charges. Moreover, his ultimate conviction was reversed.
But I'm not arguing that.
Notwithstanding, the court there said, when you were put in restraints, what happened to you after you were put in restraints, and they continued to beat you after you were in restraints, is not covered by the Heck bar. And they've done that in, and this court has done that in the Lane Oquan case, in the Gray case, in the Santos case. And all these cases, the courts have said, we're gonna remand this case.
Okay, I'm gonna try it one more time.
Okay, Judge.
All right. In Santos, and in other cases, your argument was that court errs by applying categorically Heck to all disciplinary proceedings.
Right.
I start off asking you, do you agree that disciplinary proceedings are covered under Heck? You said no. All right.
Not categorically.
In Santos, the claims were segregated. The court says, here are claims that are intertwined with the convictions, Heck bar. But here are claims in the proceedings that are not, therefore they're not Heck bar. What I'm asking you, what's the best argument you can make here that there are claims that are segregable? Because here there were two proceedings which facially seem to cover all of the claims below. That's what I'm asking, if you can.
Even if you accept the facts in these disciplinary reports as true, Mr. Oaten testified under oath in a deposition, which is facts, which is admissible evidence, that after he was restrained, they continued to beat him. There's nothing in these reports that say, after he was restrained in the lieutenant's office, we continued to beat him. There's nothing that says, when he was on the walk, we threw him down and had to kick and jump on him. There's nothing about that in here. So those are severable. Those, if Heck can be categorically applied to prison disciplinary proceedings that do not result in a loss of good time on a 1983 case, which I disagree with, then there's your facts, Judge.
Well, there was a loss of good time here.
It's not going to be restored through the 1983 action, as it would if he had challenged the due process nature of the disciplinary proceeding. If we go before a jury and they find in favor of my client and give him $10, he doesn't get his good time back. Moreover, from these disciplinary reports, we don't know what they attributed the loss of good time to, what facts, what charges. It's not in these reports. I hope,
We understand your factual argument concerning what transpired, but as you know, we don't determine the facts. The difficulty for the panel is we've got Heck from the Supreme Court, and we've got panels, and we've got law that says disciplinary proceedings. Heck originally said convictions. The later cases say disciplinary proceedings. So we're not making a factual determination. We are trying to discern whether or not and to what extent the Heck bar applies here. Notwithstanding, any judgment on our part about the facts and that kind of thing. That's where we, why we set it for oral argument.
Judge,
your brief did not address Santos or Gray or any of the later cases, and so that's why we start off asking.
Judge, the state, I don't think they can have it both ways. They can't say accept all of our facts is true and then say there's no factual dispute. And if they're going to ask the court to accept all of their facts as true, we have to, I would think we have to at least at a minimum have admissible evidence on the facts. And these reports that they've turned in this case are, the district court said material issues of fact preclude summary judgment. So he, this case is now before this court, and this court is weighing facts. And it would appear from the court's precedents that the court under this type of collateral appeal would only be reviewing an issue of law, not
well,
fact.
Let me put it to you like this. Even if we agreed with you, a prior panel, Santos involved a Section 1983 claim, just like here.
Correct.
Disciplinary proceedings,
yes.
Just like here. And the court held that those claims were heck barred because they were inextricably tied to the underlying proceedings and based on, and held that the claims were barred. This panel can't overrule that, so how is,
Santos was remanded because only some of the claims, just like this court found, the district court in this case found some of the claims, not all of the claims. That's the same with the Lane Oakland case, the Gray case, and Santos. Santos was remanded. Those cases were all remanded back to the district court. Two settled, one was tried. So that's basically what the district court did in this case. It found some, not all. Just Judge Stewart, I'm just passionate on this issue. As you know, I've been before you before on these very issues, and I appreciate the court's indulgence and legal arguments. It's exciting for me to discuss these precedents because
that's why we said
I do a lot of inmates.
That's why we set the case for argument. As you know, we're not making fact determinations. It's what the court held in the binding law. And here, and as said, we set it for argument to help us understand. Yes, in Santos, there were some claims that were deemed not to be subsumed. And what I ask you was help us understand how which of the claims in this case might fit into the carve-out that Santos allows. But that was what I asked. And so instead, you're saying there was some categorical application, and that's not what's here.
No, my answer is, once he was restrained, the force that continued after he was restrained, and the force on the walk. Those are my answers, Your Honor. And those are the same claims that the district court found survived heck.
Okay.
Thank you, Your
All
Honors.
Right. We appreciate you. Thank you much. All right, Ms. O'Brien, you reserve rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Ms. Grodner says we're not reading Muhammad.
As we've already discussed this morning, Santos and Gray were recently before this court, and the arguments as to relating whether heck applies, I mean, heck applies here. There was a disciplinary conviction. He lost good time. Also, too, in support of the motion for summary judgment, there were the disciplinary reports that were certified were not the only evidence submitted. There were also declarations from all the officers named as defendants in this matter, detailing what happened in their encounters with Auten. The heck bar, you know, the heck bar changes the analysis. Because we're arguing heck is why we're looking to these disciplinary reports. And at the end of the day, Auten's claims that he didn't do anything wrong during both of these encounters and offered no resistance is directly inconsistent with his convictions for defiance and aggravated disobedience. In order for a jury to take what Auten says is true would negate those disciplinary convictions. And so that is why we are here, is because the Heck bar clearly applies in this case.
Counsel, since we spent a lot of time with your opponent discussing, or she brought up Muhammad, can you give us sort of the nutshell distinction between the cases, that case and this one?
I apologize, Your Honor. I'm not as clear on Muhammad because I concentrated on the fact that in Santos and Gray, this court clearly said that, you know, and it's not just in those cases. There's plenty of cases in this circuit
In fact, I went back to check to see if the district court had made mention of Muhammad, and I think in the original order it did, and that's why I raised it.
And I will say, too, that the district court, you know, he agreed that, you know, Heck applies to these type of cases where there's disciplinary convictions in the prisons that result in a loss of good time.
Well, somewhat like the other line of question, the district court felt that the one claim, or at least some of it, was segregable, like in Santos, right?
Yes, Your Honor. With all due respect to the lower court, his amended ruling is confusing, because he's talking about Lieutenant Stringer, and he says that, you know, that once he was restrained, you know, that before that it's Heck bar, but after. But in both of these, like, something was read into the record that's not there. These disciplinary reports make clear that, like, in the first incident, he's, you know, combative and arguing the whole time, and then and you know, forcibly, you know, hitting officers and verbally resisting. And same thing with the second incident. There is, like I've mentioned earlier, there is no break here that you could see in Oakland, where there was a break and, you know, the incident stopping, and, you know, he's restrained and that's in. That's not these two incidents. There are continuous incidents that are covered by the disciplinary reports and his convictions. You know, that's the most important thing. The defiance and the aggravated disobedience cover, you know, what happened during both of these incidents. There is no break where he's restrained. I mean, Auten, his claim all along is that he offered no resistance to officers throughout any of these encounters, and he, you know, was just beat without provocation. And like I mentioned earlier, you know, if there wasn't a write-up for both of these incidents, this analysis would be different. But, you know, each incident, there was write-ups for, you know, violations that directly go to Auten's non-compliance with orders, and directly go to, you know, the excessive force claims that he's brought in this lawsuit.
All right. Thank you, Ms. O'Brien. Thank you, Ms. Grodin. Appreciate the briefing and argument in the case. We'll sort it out.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Appreciate it. All right.